Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, he really does this.
Yeah. Candy Shop Producers presents Pop Bob and Tootsie Pop. Yeah. Y'all already know I got a sweet tooth.
I was
going down the street the other day. 7-Eleven was on the way. I walked up in the store, I had to say, give me them Popeyes and Tootsie Pop. Popeyes and Tootsie Pop. Popeyes and Tootsie Pop. Popeyes and Tootsie Pop. Give me them now or I'm a truck.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev.
Yo.
Kim.
Follow me.
PJ. B. Austin, the hot block commander.
What's good, sports fans? Welcome back to the Roundtable. You're once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan. I'm here with my partners, Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, Nikhil Bayon. It's time to talk sports, but right now, make sure you join us in that JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join in the conversation. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline. That's 323-410-0012. But before we get started, you know we got to shout out the team. Make sure you listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Also, check out Brandon and Daniel of Sports Trap Radio Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, also on Blog Talk Radio. We also want to give a shout-out to the fellas over at GF6 Radio Show and Xbox Gamer Site. Make sure you check those guys out. That's GF6, spell it out, SIX.com, GF6.com. But don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch all of our partner shows at War Room Sports. blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com at 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. But right now, Jimmy's going to tell us what happened this week while you folks were on the grind.
What's up? What's up, gentlemen?
What's going on, Jim? What's going on this week, man? Crazy week,
man. As always, man. This is the great thing about what we call sports. There's always something to talk about. And for those who don't know, While You Were on the Grind is brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website, warroomsports.com. Click on the DirecTV logo and order a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. If you call yourself a sports fan, you got to have DirecTV, man. Football's coming up, and if you don't have the Sunday ticket, you know, it's a word for you. It's called a female. Anyway, in the news this week, Aaron Hernandez, alleged accomplice Carlos Ortiz, says that Hernandez admitted to killing Odin Lloyd. How do you gentlemen feel about what's going on in the Aaron Hernandez situation? Like, tabs on what's going on in this whole thing, so, you know.
How do I
it's
feel?
It's unreal. It's still as unreal to me. What he said. But it's still as unreal to me as when it first broke. Like, I just can't. You couldn't write this story any more sensational.
Yeah. And
yeah, like, if this was a movie, they would say, this is fiction. There's no way somebody would live a life like that, yeah, and a NFL player.
Yeah. Well, the dude, his homie, his name is Carlos Ortiz. He was supposedly with him in the car, and Odin Lloyd and Hernandez were beefing because Odin Lloyd was doing something. You know, he was chilling with some folks that Hernandez didn't care for, some people that he was actually beefing with. So, they drove around in the rented Altima, and he actually got out in the wooded area, which was supposedly dark at the time, you know, and killed the guy. So when he got back to the car, the guy Carlos Ortiz said, you know, it was dark, so he couldn't really see anything. But when he got back in the car, they were having a conversation, and Hernandez admitted to him that he did indeed, you know, kill Odin Lloyd. So, you know, they got an account straight from one of his friends.
So he said,
man.
Yeah, I put that work.
Digging. Yeah, and his man is basically snitching on him right now. But
yeah, he's telling.
Hey.
Man, I mean, this isn't like, you know, I'm like the Austin, y'all. I'm still in shock about this whole story. And as time goes on and with these athletes, just in society in general, y'all, you tend not to be shocked. This one still shocks me, but I'm afraid, like, after this whole experience, it's just going to be like, whatever, man. Like, you know, we all going to hell, y'all. That's just the bottom line.
Nah,
anyway,
I can't say that. This is an outlier, man. This is an outlier.
This makes Titus young.
No, what I'm saying, Beyonce, is I'm afraid that this won't be the outlier. Listen, ever since he got arrested for this thing.
So you think gang banging has arrived to stay in the NFL?
I mean, at the end of the day, gang banging as a culture throughout America is prevalent. So when these young guys come up, especially guys coming from the inner city, and they start to make it to the youth leagues and to the pros, I'll guarantee you right now, he's not the only gangbanger in the NFL right now. I mean, he's the only one.
Oh, no, of course
that,
not. We know Chris Johnson.
Allegedly, that we know of. I know for a fact a couple NBA players that are gangbangers, but I'm just saying, like, as time goes on.
Shout out to James Harden for being shook in that finals versus the Heat. Never mind.
No, all I'm saying is this. As society goes on, and we always talk about sports being a microcosm of society, more and more things are just accepted as opposed to being frowned upon. Like, it's becoming commonplace to see athletes arrested. It's not even a shock anymore. This is a shock because of the magnitude, but when you hear an athlete's arrested, it's not even a shock anymore as it used to be. When you look at the emasculation of the black male, it's not even a shock anymore. So it's kind of sad is what I'm saying. Overall, when you look at sports as being this microcosm of society, when you hear about athletes arrested now, like, you just say, okay, which one, which league?
Yeah, it's a few more details too, fellas. There were actually four gentlemen in the car. One dude, I forgot his first name, but he goes by the last name of Wallace. And Ortiz says by the time they stopped the car, basically he said they stopped so everybody can get out the car and pee. That's what he was told. He said that Odin Lloyd and Hernandez had shaken hands and supposedly smoothed everything over before they got out to pee. But he and Wallace and Odin Lloyd went down into the woods. The guy, Ortiz, who was sitting in the car, heard two gunshots, and then they ran back to the car without Lloyd, jumped in, and sped away. And he said that's when he admitted it to him. So The good thing for Hernandez, if there's a good thing to come out of this, is that Wallace was with him. So if he could find a way to get dude to take the charge for him, he'll still get like an accessory to murder charge, because that's what Wallace is pleading not guilty to right now. But I'm pretty sure if they're both found guilty, the shooter is going to get way more time than the accessory. So
I'm just curious, was the guy with the last name Wallace, his first name wasn't Christopher, was it?
Wow.
What? Come on, man. That's like pop rock and Tootsie Pop.
Yeah, man. Pop rocks and Tootsie Pop. I'm chill for a second. Anyway, let's go to the next story, gentlemen, because, you know, we talked a lot about that, but it had to be said. So let's talk about pop rocks and RG3, wife and sister-in-law, allegedly recorded a rap video, Pop Rocks and Tootsie Pops. Now, I heard that it's not him. I heard that it is him. How it started was him on Twitter. You know, he kept retweeting it several times. So I don't know for a fact whether it is him, but what do you think? Do you think it's him?
I know it's him.
I was going around the town the other night. I asked my brother down, they said, hey, go roll to the other side. Can we pop rocks and tootsie pop? Pop rocks and tootsie pop. Pop rocks and tootsie pop. Pop rocks and tootsie pop.
Hit it so hard, we had to stop. Yo, all I gotta say is, free Rob Parker. That's
free Rob. Yo, free Rob.
And for
free
anybody
Rob
out
Parker.
There,
the are you saying the thing about the voice though?
Yeah, that's him. I mean, he's not denying that it's him. And but the thing, my thing is,
I have a question.
With
I
the
got
whole,
a question for you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Huh? Oh no,
I got a question for y'all, but go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say, you know, there's been a lot of course, Redskins fans, you know, people having fun with the criticism, calling them a cornball brother, talking about Rob Parker. And people are getting all up in arms, like, come on, y'all. Like, seriously, he can be your quarterback, and he can be a great quarterback. That doesn't mean he's not a cornball dude. Corny, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it because people want to take the extreme, like, well, at least he's not out there getting DUIs and killing anybody. Nobody said anything about that. Like, he's having fun. It made me laugh. But even if I'm laughing and I'm having fun along with him, it doesn't take away from him being corny. And we've all done corny things from time to time. So stop taking everything personal for this, man, because nobody's saying anything serious about it.
I did something corny a couple minutes ago with my joke. We all do corny stuff.
Yeah, that was pop, right?
My question for y'all is, and I may be going a little too deep into this, but understanding Robert Griffin's political leanings, his social circles, Could this be compared to kind of shucking and jiving and blackfacing and kind of defending himself?
I'm going to chalk it up to the brother having fun, but
okay,
it was corny.
No, be often, I thought about that. Yo, I'm glad you said it because now we can go in. it definitely is like coonery. It's tomfoolery.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is he's playing into the stereotype. I mean, he even got the two white women around him.
The whack plats. I feel like I should give him some chicken and watermelon.
Yo, rapping as if
he wouldn't need it.
Lil or young. So
can we eat that?
I agree with all that, y'all.
True, he don't even go to the presidential press dinner.
See, y'all chalking it up to shuckery and jivery. I'm chalking it up to this. Listen to me closely. Robert Griffin III needs some yams. Now, wait, you may say, okay, how does he need yams? He just got married. He gets yams. Y'all not listening to me. He needs yams. What he has now is sweet potatoes. You don't know the difference. You don't know what I'm talking about. He needs some yams. He needs some candy yams. He already gets
But you know what, though, man?
Y'all know what I'm
it's
talking
It's one
about.
Of those things where obviously he hasn't learned yet that his actions and his words have powers outside of football. Whether that's right or wrong is irrelevant, but it's the fact. So Robert Griffin III can't say or even act in a certain way without it, you know, coming off, you know, even if it's not what he intended it to come off as. People look at him different. You know what I'm saying? So with that being said, you have to understand that, yo, you look like a straight coon, yo. I don't care how you meant it. Even with the whole situation with the gifts, like, you, yo.
I have more to say about the gifts, but, you know, I ain't mad at
you.
What was the name of the gentleman that Samuel L. Jackson played in Django Unchained? Never mind.
Steven.
Okay, all right, cool.
Steven, yeah.
We're going to leave it alone, man. Like, I'm just saying, like, free Rob Parker, that's all I got
to
say about
Steven
that,
Steven Griffin III, shout out to you.
Whoa here. Let's talk about, look at this. See, this is what I'm talking about, B. Austin. Lawrence Taylor's son arrested for statutory rape and sodomy.
That's genetic.
So, seriously, how ironic is that, though, man?
We're laughing about something that I feel really isn't a joke. I mean, it just happens to be we have a sick and twisted sense of humor. But
I was going to ask you, are you serious about that? Do you think that he was okay? You think it could be hereditary?
Yes.
So you think it could be hereditary?
Not necessarily hereditary.
R. Kelly's son is in trouble.
I do think that nurturing played a role in this.
So nurture, but not nature.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha. So So you say this pop basically set him down like, yo, take it if you want it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like you would tell her. Like, yeah, I mean,
whenever statutory comes into play, though, Jimmy, it doesn't necessarily mean take it.
It
was offered.
Yeah.
It just was offered.
This is true.
It wasn't. It should have been on the market.
Yeah, statutory is usually not actually by force.
I mean, you're right.
They just have a thing.
It's BBR.
They have a thing for younger.
So I get it.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. They got a thing for young girls. That's, you know, Kellyisms, things like that.
They listen. They listen to 12 play, and they get it.
All right. I'm just saying, man, like, this is a sad story, but, you know, and this is, he's not even an athlete, but the fact of the matter is he's Lawrence Taylor's son, and this is definitely ironic. This is like,
he's an athlete by association.
And the sad thing is his pop just beat a case with an underage toot.
With a 15-year-old.
Now his son, same thing with the underage toot. So it's just sad.
Yeah.
Maybe they should just leave Toots alone.
Shout out to all the Toots that listen to the War Room. But anyway, it's a sad situation, man. It's definitely like rain on a wedding day. It's like good advice. Never mind. Blake Griffin challenges whoever that thinks he's soft. You know what I'm saying?
I got the quote.
Yeah, I mean, he says it's all about who get who first, man. Blake Griffin, a.k.a. Prodigy. Dad, read the quote.
Here's the quotes. Because, you know, Blake Griffin is basically tired of y'all saying that he's soft. So he said, "I've never really worried about being called soft or people thinking I'm soft." Lying. "If anybody wants to step and take that challenge, I'm more than happy off the court because I don't want to get suspended. It's not something that I dwell on." Lying. "I've never really had a problem with being soft."
Not true.
Kill, what do you think about that? Because we made a video about that on War Room Sports TV, if everybody want to go check that out, warroomsportstv.com. But we didn't get an opinion from Brother Kill. What do you think about Blake Griffin basically, you know, asking the whole country, the whole world to shoot a fair one if they think he's soft?
That's completely whack and corny, as you referred to Robert Griffin, because let's say he did beat up everyone in the world. Yeah. Let's say he beat up all 310 million Americans, right? But then he still went out on a basketball court and got his heart taken, oversoft, didn't step up in the playoffs, let people intimidate him. It wouldn't matter. So he could be 310 million in O versus us, but then you got cats like Kevin Garnett still taking his heart. So it's
grand. I just want to say to the War Room world, you know, being a tough guy isn't necessarily about winning fights, because you're going to get your ass whooped in life. That's just life. But if you think about it and you have fear in your heart and mind and you got to reinforce yourself by telling other people that you ain't scared, you're not tough, man.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of Donald.
Because it's on your mind.
You're
letting people. Oh.
He always had to go on TV and tell everybody, "Yeah, I'm the leader of this team." Like, why do you?
Yeah, I'm the leader. It's my team. And Akil is the perfect gentleman.
Like, those guys know that.
I once saw Akil fight an entire football team. Never mind.
Yeah, hold on. That's the old Akil, man. That's
not Doctor. That's not Doctor Bayon.
That's when the beef started baking.
Anyway, man. The bottom line with this is some things just don't need to be said. You know, if it's understood, it doesn't need to be said. So,
oh, my bad.
You know,
but, Blake, if you're listening, this is B. Austin, Hot Block Commander, War Room Sports. And as Doc Holliday said, I'm your Huckleberry.
I'm going to leave that story at that, yo. There's nothing else I can say, man. Because B. Austin won't get attacked, man. It's, you know, he's the mulatto heavyweight champion in the world. But anyway...
I got a dark-skinned brother's mentality. I can't lose.
He called out a lot of athletes in this 2.5 years we've been doing this. So you better watch your back. You at least better walk around and not forget about who's on your list. Because
I'm definitely
you know,
not.
Like Jimmy said, it's all about who see who first. So don't
it's all about who see who first, man.
My head's on a swivel.
It's all about who see who first, man. Be awesome, man, to slander so many athletes and call them out for. It's not even about slandering athletes, because athletes get slandered all the time, but I mean, most people just don't call them out for rumbles the way Be awesome does. So, you know, guard your grill, knuckle up. Dev, tell everybody who's having a birthday this week.
Yeah, vigilante justice. All right, everybody. Birthdays this week, as usual, are brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. For the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area and beyond. Visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. And whatever you do, make sure you tell them War Room Sports sent you.
My birthday! Yay!
All right, we want to give a shout-out to a couple of brothers on the birthday. Chris Cooley, a longtime Washington Redskins tight end, actually left and came back this prior season. He turns 31 today, so happy birthday to Chris Cooley. He's a cool dude. If there's any likable Redskins, he's definitely the one. Always doing crazy stuff on YouTube and on the radio. Andre Johnson, the receiver from the Houston Texans. I'll be in Houston tomorrow. He turns 32. Maybe I'll party with Andre. See what he's getting into. See if he's meeting
maybe
up with the white.
Maybe hang out at the strip at the. No more.
He's an NFL player.
What,
that means you might end up in a prison.
I know. I might have to leave that alone. But he turns 32. One of our all-time favorite point guards, Mr. Rod Strickland, turns 47 years old. And last happy birthday shout-out goes to Mr. Leon No Teeth Spinks, who turned 60 today. Had more heart than his brother did. And that's the birthday shout-outs for the day.
Rod Strickland, 47.
How is that?
Damn. Give a nice big war room salute to all of those gentlemen on their birthday. Be awesome. You want to tell everybody how to get in touch with us real quick?
No, my brother. I'm going to leave
that. All right. Well, y'all can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab and send a message about our company, our show, to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. Better do that before the rates go up. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click that blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Fair and Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, and to download our free War Room Sports mobile app, which has just got a huge overhaul, and we'll be letting you guys know in the coming weeks when you can go into the App Store and into the Google Play Store to download the latest version. It's sorry about that, but it is going to be a re-download. It's not going to be an upgrade because we switched operations here.
Overhaul everything.
Everything. So you can also make sure you check out our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you're too lazy to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to make sure you get updates and reminders about the show every week. And we'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. And if you text us, we'll read those too. So, if you got our numbers, text us. To call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. And the Digital Extreme Tech hotline is open right now. So if you guys want to call in and talk about anything, just dial that number, 323-410-0012. And in the meanwhile, we're going to talk about some hot topics, and hot topics, of course, are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? All right, well, just get back and try audiobooks. Let somebody else do the reading. Just go to Audible, sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports, and in no time, you can be listening to the book you want to read. So go ahead and do that. All right, fellas, Jimmy in particular, because you might have been the only one of us who saw this, Anderson Silva. One of your favorites, he got his boot stretched this past Friday.
Absolutely.
In UFC. What happened? Why?
All right. Well, here's the thing.
Supposed to be the man.
In my opinion, Anderson Silva was the greatest and still is the greatest MMA fighter ever. And he's also one of the more popular fighters. And the reason he's popular is because he clowns around and he jokes, sort of like Floyd does, or Roy did in his prime. And, you know, he was joking around too damn much this fight, in my personal opinion. He was shucking and jiving and got caught on the chin. You know what I'm saying?
He was Adrian Bronerin.
Put it like this. In the boxing community, he was considered unbeatable by many. You know, some people thought he's going to lose this fight, but people pick against him every fight, but he always wins. But this is the equivalent of Floyd, like, shucking and jiving, like, you know how boxers do when they smile and tell their opponents you're not hurting them and they're shucking and jiving, but this is the equivalent of that, but then getting caught right on your chin. And he got caught on his chin, and the ball, like, knocked him out. If you look at the pictures, yo, my man's eyes were rolled up in the back of his head. He was somewhere else. So at the end of the day, if they were to have a rematch, I would pick him again. This reminds me of, like,
right.
McCall and Lennox Lewis. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah, one of those things where, like, in any combat sport, you know, boxing, MMA, like, the right shot, you can get caught out there like that. But I get Jimmy's point. It doesn't necessarily mean this guy's a better fighter, or it doesn't even mean that he could do it again, given the chance. But you catch somebody with that lucky shot, you know. That's just how it goes down.
I just want to say a couple of things. First off, all the GSP fans that slandered me, GSP is still boring. And Leroy McConnell is in our chat room at KC Mac. He said he thinks that Silva threw the fight, and I've been hearing that a lot. I just don't believe that because, yo, if you're going to throw a fight, here's
you're not going to let somebody hit you like that.
Yeah, he got caught in a submission attempt, right, a deadly submission attempt earlier in the fight. And worked his way out. My thing is, if you're going to, you know, throw a fight, you could have tapped out right there, and nobody would have questioned it because it was a submission. You don't throw a fight.
You don't get knocked.
That didn't put on the chin. Yeah. You don't have your eyes rolling the back head. That's not how you throw a fight. He could have tapped out for the fight, yo. You don't throw a fight by getting punched in the chin, yo.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I don't think it was a thrown fight, but we shall see. It still was an exciting fight, even in loss.
He took a bad one.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
You got knocked the fuck out!
Exactly. I was waiting.
The thing about combat sports is that's what makes them so entertaining. Because, yo, at any time, yo, your wig can be split.
Yeah, and Silva found that out the hard way. All right, so, look, man, which now I know KC Mack in the chat room is definitely going to have an opinion on these next two things. Well, before I even get to that, let's just talk about, just give a shout out to Alex Rios from the White Sox, who had a big night the other night against the Tigers. He went 6-for-6, and on top of the 6-for-6, he had 2 steals, and that's really what put him into the record books, because I think he's only the 4th player in MLB history to get 6 hits in a game and 2 steals. The last person to do that was Sammy Sosa back 20 years ago, 1993. So, you know, shout out to him. The 6-for-6 night, either the 6-for-6 or just having 6 hits, period, I think he was like the 32nd player to do that. But, you know, it's the 2 steals that kind of put him into the record book. KC Max in the chat room, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I know he said a 4-for-4 against Verlander has never happened. But, it has.
Listen,
now.
Shout out to Rambo.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was saying shout out to him for Rambo and, like, winning the game basically by himself.
I was just going to say the only player I saw with the ability, just based on ability that I thought could actually go 6-for-6 with 2 steals, was Willie Mays Hayes. Other than that, I didn't think anybody could possibly do that. So, you know.
Say hey.
Yeah, but, you know. He runs like Maze, but he hits like so look, now this is something, because if you guys don't know why we keep referring to KC Mack, because he's one of the one of our bloggers. He also blogs for our homies over at Sports Kings. Now, I know he's been writing about this and actually campaigning for this all week. Yasiel Puig, I know I'm butchering his name, but he's taken the MLB by storm. He's been up in the majors for 38 days, and the dude, you know, his statistics are amazing. He's a little raw, so, he's doing crazy things in the field. You know, he kind of reminds me of Bryce Harper, you know, when he first came up, but with a little more to him. And he's been getting a lot of attention lately. Let me read. He's first of all, he's batting 394 in only 35 games. 634 slugging percentage. The dude is basically on fire. He has, I believe, 8 home runs, 27 runs. He's killing it right now for the Dodgers. And, you know, he's one of the reasons that the Dodgers have had somewhat of a resurgence this season. But he's been getting into a lot of, let's say, veteran players thinks he's a little bit disrespectful. He doesn't really want to talk to the media. His interpreter got in trouble at a game because he was actually trying to get a phone number from a fan, a woman, for Puig. So his interpreter got into a little bit of trouble about that.
Hating on my fan.
He also had a situation. I'm trying to remember who the situation was with. But while I'm thinking of that, like, Jimmy, what do you think about this dude? Like, is he the real deal, or is this something that's just going to cool off and he'll fade back into oblivion?
It's one of those things that I'll reserve judgment, but I can say it's very impressive. I mean, if you look at the size of the guys, Paul is no rainbow. He's like 6'4". Matter of fact, and Casey Mack just put it in our chat. He's 6'3", 245. And Casey Mack says if he were American, he wouldn't even be playing baseball. He'd probably be a football player, which is true. But his athletic ability and size and so far what he's able to do are just utterly amazing. But you know how sports is. If they have enough time to, you know, kind of watch film on you and see what your habits are and your tendencies, so he has to keep working. And
obviously, he will not remain hitting 394, but an interesting fact that I saw about this gentleman is his bat speed is slightly higher than Albert Pujols's, and he has top 10% ever bat speed. So why folks are saying that the hitting, his talent as a hitter probably is real. It's not a fluke. He's not going to hit 394. I'm not saying that. But
I mean, you know, but at the same time, even with that bat speed, you still have to see how the pitcher's making adjustments to you, because believe they will. So you have to continue to work on your game, because if you look at the top 10 people with bat speed, I'm pretty sure all of them just aren't Hall of Fame players. But he has the tools. Now it's a matter of what do you do with these tools.
Right. Now, here's one of the stories that I wanted to tell you guys about. They were at a game, and Luis Gonzalez, the former star from the Arizona Diamondbacks back then, you know, he went up to talk to this guy at batting practice, you know, before a game. And he introduced himself. He was speaking to him in Spanish because Puig is Cuban. So the whole time he's, you know, talking to the guy and, you know, trying to relate to him, being nice to him, Puig wouldn't even look up or acknowledge that Luis Gonzalez was standing there.
You know? I talked to my agent.
So, you know, Luis Gonzalez just walked away like, damn, you know, what's up with that? So Mark McGwire, who's a hitting coach on the Dodgers, saw this, and he actually jumped into Puig's face about that, you know, letting him know, like, hey, this man won a World Series on a hit off of Mariano Rivera. You know, he's a veteran. You need to show him some respect, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they said that's just the kind of dude he is. I saw some stories about him where he just said, you know, he's not used to all the media because down where he's from, you know, he doesn't get the press on his back like that. So he's not used to it. He doesn't like it. But, you know, I'm thinking that's cool. I understand that 100%. But this is what you signed up to do. This is where you signed up to play. And if you're this talented, dog, the media is going to be there. So you're going to have to learn how to deal with that.
You in America.
You diss the media all the time, and you definitely can't.
Yo,
just
it's a couple ways to look at that, though.
You know,
it's
veteran.
A couple ways to look at that. Because he can be a complete asshole, and if he builds the reputation of being an asshole, he kind of can get away with stuff later on, sort of like the Charles Barkley theory. Like, you know, that's just him being him, if he continues to be an asshole. But at the end of the day.
My man said, I ain't got no love for the other side.
This
is the question I want to ask you guys, because when I mentioned Casey Mack and his campaign, after 38 days in the major, 35 games in 38 days, does he deserve to go to the All-Star game, which is on Tuesday? There's a lot of people saying hell no, and there's a lot of people saying, yeah, he should go. Jonathan Papelbon was actually one of the people who had something to say about the guy. You know, And somebody had to point out to him, like, well, you know, when you were a rookie, you made the All-Star game after, like, 40 games. You know, this guy did it all in, like, a month, whereas Papelbon, since he was pitching, it may have been, like, a 2-3 month stretch for him. But, you know, people probably were feeling the same way about him. Young guy, you know, in the All-Star game. What do you guys think? Should he make it?
Yo, it depends upon when you ask me. So now I got to think about how I feel right now, because I've been on both sides of this argument. Man, it's very difficult because as of right now, he's playing the best baseball in baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. And
right.
And here's something that I'm going to sound crazy when I say this, but this is the reality of the situation. When you read the stories about him being an asshole, I kind of don't want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And that's what I'm being real though.
Yeah. No, I mean that's how it goes.
And that's the effect of it. And that's the effect of being that way.
And for me, it doesn't have anything to do with that, but I would say no, just because of what Jimmy said. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. You know what I'm saying? If he's this good, then he'll earn plenty of All-Star berths. I don't think after 38 games, you know, in a grind as long as the MLB season is, with all the veterans out there and the people who've been a part of that grind since jump, I don't think you put him in the All-Star game. You know, and Casey Mack is saying you do it just because he's the most talked-about player in the majors, besides Chris Davis and Miggy, but I don't think you do it.
So you do it for business reasons, basically.
My man Casey Mack
told me to vote, so I'm still going to vote. So none of this made sense, what I just said. I'm just doing it for my man Casey Mack.
I don't want our listeners to call me on the carpet, so I'm going to immediately nix my credibility where the sport of baseball is concerned. But I was the type of guy that always rooted for the bad guys in the movie. So I don't have no problem with somebody that doesn't have a problem with being nice to the other side. Like, you know, get out of here. I play for this squad.
There's too
much chicanery and hugging and friendliness, and let's play together and let's kiss and let's wear women's clothing in sports today.
But the Gonzalez thing was just an old head. That's somebody, you know, you can kind of brain suck off of him for, you know, some advice and stuff like that. You don't diss dudes of that stature, you know what I mean?
True, I feel you. I feel that.
But, you know, the other stuff you say, you know, yeah, all the friendliness, but, yeah, in a situation like that, you know, that he could have made that his old head, but now old head want to hit him with a bat. All right, so we'll see. In the land of the NFL, you know, we know training camp starts in about 2 weeks. The New York Giants have landed their guy. Victor Cruz signed 6 years, $46 million with a $15.6 million in guarantees. Do you guys think he's worth that? Is that a good contract for a slot receiver such as the Salsa Man?
If he can get Najee lined up against him every play, probably.
I am... Understand
it might not be good,
because
Najee moved out of the division.
I'm as close to a supporter as I can be for somebody that is – I root for a rival. So rooting for the Eagles, and especially seeing how he lobotomized and sodomized Najee, you know, I should be rooting against this guy. But being objective, yo, I love Victor Cruz's game. I love his story. It would seem as though he's kind of humble. He's a hard worker. He's highly skilled, and he's a representative of the
team. That's a lot of compliments to a rival, though, dude.
I'm just because I watch his game,
dance on a dude every time you score on
him. Where do you see this humility at?
That's celebrating the touchdown. Within the context of the game. But I've, like, in interviews and kind of hearing him speak, you know, maybe I'm fooled, but you don't pay that much money to a slot guy, man.
You got too much love for a rivalry. You got a little bit too much love. That's one thing to respect the rival, yo, but you know, you went on for, like, 5 minutes.
I recognize game, man, and I got game.
I get that, but damn, dog,
I can't pay a worker.
He's a beautiful person. He affects the community in a positive way. You kind of went on a little bit too much, B.
And he's a great dancer.
He definitely.
I don't like his stance steps.
He still plays slot, though, and that's the bottom line. He plays slot receiver.
He plays in the slot.
But here's the thing about the way the game is played now. It's not traditional football where a slot receiver wouldn't be looked at to be as powerful as they are in today's game. A slot receiver is very important.
No, you know what, though? You know what?
Plus, he's also a slot receiver that can stretch.
But he lines up on the outside, too. He's not a Wes Welker who's exclusively in the slot. He gets catches three-yard passes.
I know, but what I'm saying, Austin, is even the Wes Welker, like, the game has changed where the slot receiver has a lot more value now than it would have even 5 years ago.
Man,
I mean,
Wes Welker is my favorite Caucasian in the game who's not a quarterback.
They're about to start
giving that dude
slot receivers are taking the money. Slot receivers are taking the money away that used to go to running backs. Like, they cut a couple mil off their salaries
and put
them into the slot receiver.
That's a good point, Jimmy, because, you know, in today's vertical passing game, you know, league, they're definitely very important because, you know, you need that person to keep the defense a little honest. So, you know, you need that little Wes Welker running around catching, you know, 5 yard slants and stuff like that and running around so you can get your vertical game going. So, yeah, I can see it. You know, he's going to have to live up to it, but, you know, Namdi's going, so hopefully he don't do the Eagles like he usually does them.
We got to see whether the Giants play the Niners this year because Namdi is his woman.
It's like
Namdi, he got to share Namdi with Carrie, with Olivia Pope.
No, she got to share Namdi with Victor when he comes in town. It's the other way around.
Using Namdi, yo.
All right, so Matt Stafford got paid also. I don't know if you guys remember. He had 2 years, $23.5 million.
Have been slandering the heck out of him. My fault.
No, he had 2 years, $23.5 million left on his deal. So they didn't, you know, get rid of that contract. They just extended, you know, on the end of that. So they added 3 more years, $53 more million, and $41.5 million in guarantees. So his total contract is 5 years, $76.5 million for one Mr. Matthew Stafford. Does he deserve that kind of money?
No, but Joe Flacco messed up the market. And I'll be the first to say that he's got all the tools, but it's hard to really gauge his game because his growth is stunted. It's like a little kid with a binky, and we all know what his binky is. So it's kind of like I don't think he deserves that contract, but I'm not as mad at it as the detractors who are punishing him because he plays on a bad team. Like, everybody's like, oh, he's terrible. He doesn't deserve to be paid $4 an hour.
But
like,
you know what?
Good,
you know what,
he has the talent.
You know what statistic came out, B. Austin, that has everybody saying that? They're saying against teams that are 500 or above, with Matt Stafford at the helm. Matter of fact, I'm wording it like it should be worded. This is how they worded it. Against teams 500 or above, Matt Stafford is 1-23. Now, football is the ultimate and the consummate team game. Like, I was trying to word it correctly and say, you know, with Matt Stafford at the helm, the Detroit Lions are 1-23 against teams 500 or above.
Yes.
It's a terrible record, and we know the record gets put on the quarterback. But why they don't say that about Megatron? Why he not 1-23 against teams?
Because guess what? If they were 23-1, they'd be talking about how great he is. They'd be saying Matthew Stafford is the greatest quarterback in the league. He's 23-1.
Can I provide a little bit of context to this? And this is something the listeners don't know. The Detroit Lions secondary is so bad that they called Jimmy Williams, Akil Bayon, Devin McMillan, and Bradley Anderson to line up as the corners and safeties for their secondary. Their secondary is putrid, and it has been putrid for like 3 seasons. So if teams are passing against that, they're going to put up tremendous, tremendous numbers and get victories against a weak secondary.
As far as Stafford is concerned, though, you know, I've been on record saying that I think Matt Stafford is a little overrated, but we know that sports these days, it's, you know, statistic driven.
And if you're going by that, how can you really deny this guy? In 2011, you know, he threw for 5,038 yards and 41 touchdowns. Now, last year, his touchdowns were down by 21. He only threw for 20, but he was only 33 yards away from another 5,000-yard season. So I know, you know, and the smart listeners out there know that, you know, these stats, his stats get padded because of the offense they run, because of the players, the player he plays with. You know, a lot of that has a lot to do with it. But at the same time, when he does have those stats and they're right there on paper, how can you deny him when his agent comes to you and said, I want to be paid like this guy?
Yo, free. Yo,
same,
free
same
tight
for Tony
end,
Romo.
Yo.
Same for Tony Romo.
Free tight end.
I just want to see. How he performs this year, because now he has another weapon in Reggie Bush. So I want to see how he performs this year. And I'm
but
also
Jimmy, that's another passing weapon, though. He might throw for 6,000 yards.
Yeah. How much of that money is guaranteed, Dev?
$41.5 million. $41.5 million.
They on the
guaranteed.
Hook, brother. They are on.
And think
the
about.
Damn. I was trying to justify, but I'm like, damn, 41 and a half.
And just like with Tony Romo when he got his contract. Donovan McNabb came out this week and said that Matt Stafford doesn't deserve that type of money.
So,
yo, let me tell you something real quick.
Earlier in the show,
statistically, he
list.
Doesn't compare with either one of these guys.
Yo, I agree, but let me tell you something, though. Before B. Austin starts to slander McNabb, I never liked Donovan McNabb as a player. I thought he was putrid, overrated. In the media, I'm finding myself liking McNabb just because he slanders everybody. And I think that him and Rodney Harrison should get a show together where they just sit there. Neither one of them. Yo, they hate everybody and everything.
They should get a show called Nobody's Safe. We better trademark that. Steal it.
Jimmy,
we'll take
Rodney
it.
Harrison was good at what he did on the football field.
That's what makes it so much funnier, is the fact that he wasn't, and he don't care. He'll still slay to you. He'll talk about you even if you're better than him.
Right, he's talking about who doesn't deserve contracts. Yo, you were getting paid like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning at the same time they were getting paid like that.
And
so
playing like Bobby
Orton. I'm pretty sure there were a lot of people in America who felt the same way about you, but like Jimmy said, he keeping it 100. You know, that's what we pride
that's
ourselves
what makes
on.
It, that, to me, but, is what makes it hilarious, yo. They got to put him and Rodney Harrison at least on a panel together, because Rodney Harrison roots against everything and everybody. He don't like nobody. They'd be like, who
but he also
like
said
nobody.
That about Harrison. I don't think Harrison was all that good. I mean,
he was overrated.
Dirtiest.
He's a system player.
Yeah, he was better. Yeah, he was better than
Donovan. Dirtiest player in the league.
All right, now, do you
Donovan
think he was better
he
at his position
Donovan,
than Dev? Do you think that Rodney Harrison was better at his position than Donovan was at his?
No, actually, I don't. Only when they faced off, he was smart enough to know that Donovan wasn't good, and he exploited that. But just on
yo,
everyday,
they might
every
hate on
basis,
each other. They
got to
show
you Harrison was that good.
I don't think
he hit hard,
I
which I like,
great,
but he, you know,
but I think
he was dirty too.
What you keep saying that as if we care. We like that.
They might hate on each other. You put them on a panel together. Like, you was garbage.
Well, Rodney Harrison said something to that effect right before the Super Bowl.
He said
McNabb was stupid. Couldn't read the defense.
See, we feel
proved,
as though he's
and he
an
proved
athletic
it right.
quarterback, and he's very good, but we can force him into mistakes and force him into throws and confuse him at the line.
In other words.
That's not verbatim, but that's pretty close.
Yeah,
in other
there
words,
you go.
He kind of dumb. All right, so, yeah, that's that. So Matthew Stafford is paid. Victor Cruz is paid. Let's talk a little hip-hop real quick because, you know, it's been a big week in hip-hop because we know every time Jay-Z does something, it's big for the masses. So, you know, in light of all the Magna Carta, Holy Grail reviews we've read, conversations that we've been in, and we were even requested to talk about this on the show. But, yeah, I don't really want to talk about that album, I mean, unless it falls somewhere where you guys have to, you know, mention it in this talk. But
okay.
Let's go real quick. Let's not make this a long thing. Everybody give me your top five Jay-Z albums. And if this is in it or if this is not in it, tell us why.
Go ahead, B. Austin, because I know you're going to say something to piss me off.
He ain't going to name an album. He's just going
to
name Beach Chair. Sounds like an album to him.
Beach Chair is the album. Like, go ahead, Dog. You got it.
Number one is Kingdom Come. Number two is Blueprint 3.
Come on, man. Be serious, B.
All right. Number one is Reasonable Doubt. Number two is The Black Album. Number three is Volume 1. Number four is Volume 2. And number
five. Volume 2 as in Hard Knock Life?
Hard Knock Life, yeah.
Okay.
Number five is American Gangster.
Okay. All right, well, I don't got to slander you too much. I thought you were going to put Kingdom Come up there, and I was going to leave the show for the night. But we're in agreement at number one with Reasonable Doubt. And here's what's going to shock you. I got the Blueprint at two, and it's like I know the Blueprint doesn't have
you already
good
failed.
Songs. Now, let me tell you and explain myself. I know the Blueprint doesn't have as many good songs as other albums like the Black Album, but the songs that I like on the Blueprint were so crazy
Carry
to me
it.
That, yo, it carries the album and because, you know, melodically and just the subject matter in the Blueprint, I thought he took it to another level. So the Blueprint is number two. Three, I probably would have the Black Album. Four, I probably would have Volume 2, and then, you know, Volume 3, you know, as fifth, the Hard Knock Life.
Mine, of course, Reasonable Doubt. Let me speak on the Blueprint real quick, because I've been talking about this a lot. I think the Blueprint, for all the critical acclaim it gets, I think it's extremely overrated. Now, that doesn't mean I don't like it, because if I did want to go back to some of Jay-Z's best work, I could go to that album. It's just, for me, the whole album, like Jimmy was just saying, you know, wasn't good enough for me, at least, to put it that high up on the list. But the fact that Blueprint seems to be one of the top two albums for a lot of people, a lot of Jay-Z fans, it's kind of making me, you know, think back and kind of think, like, for as much acclaim as Jay gets, I think he put out a lot of duds. Because if Blueprint is one of the top albums, which it very could be, you know what I'm saying? It's like, and for me, it only has six good songs on it. So it's like, how good were these other albums? But we already know that Jay-Z has gotten to a level, and he did this a long time ago, where he could sing his ABCs on the track, and it'll be the dopest thing that a lot of people have ever heard in their life.
He ain't got bars like
that. We know where to. Huh?
No, I was saying that you made a good point, but I'm gonna let you get your list out before, you know, I do my first comment
list,
you and Doc Bay.
My list
he
is
asked,
Reasonable Doubt at one, American Gangster at two, The Black Album at three, and My Lifetime Volume 1, Sunshine. That was garbage. I know what boys like. I got that at four, even though those two songs I named were trash. And I got Hard Knock Life at number five. Like I said, I can go to the Blueprint to hear some of Jay-Z's best work ever, but the album just isn't. Like, I can't put it in the top five when it's like 6 out of 13 songs that are good.
But that's why I had to, like, break it down the way I did, Dev. It's
no,
like,
I understand what you're saying, because that's what I'm saying. I feel what you're saying. But, you know, I just
the great thing about music now is playlists. Like, yo, I can straight make the album now without putting all the tracks in there.
And that's how that's exactly how I have Blueprint in my phone. Like, I just
the thing is,
can go to hell.
If I have to pick which album I listen to the most in terms of his body of work, I listen to Reasonable Doubt by far more than anything else.
Oh,
but
that's
after
the
that,
Bible.
But after that, it's still the Blueprint. Even though it's only six songs, I listen to those six songs more than any other album. But anyway, go ahead, Kill.
Yeah, I gotta go with Reasonable Doubt 1. I actually like In My Lifetime Volume 1 as 2. And then everything else is, American Gangster 3 and everything else is just kind of a mishmash of I'll go and just grab the songs that I like and then just put those in my playlist.
Kill said, I got 1, 2, and the rest of them Jones don't mean nothing to me.
Yeah, you got to take some of that stuff off Volume 1, though, dog. You got to take off Sunshine, man. But
I acknowledge Jimmy that Sunshine ain't great, but I can listen to Sunshine. I can't, and I have never. And you know, everybody on this show, we've been Jay-Z fans since before half of y'all even knew who Jay-Z was. So I'm going to say even when that album first came out, I could never listen to I Know What Boys Like. I skip that every time.
I hate that song. I hate that song, yo.
Yo,
but listen,
Puff
though.
Threw him a dud on that one.
It's funny because I thought about this, yo, because I listen to so much hip-hop. I love hip-hop, for those that don't know. Another thing that happened with in terms of the Blueprint and all that, Dev, is what came out around that time. Because if you look at the 90s, early 90s, late 90s, there were so many classic albums dropping that, you know, you had to have a certain pen game. As the hip-hop became, you know, more corporate and more about the money, albums that were dropping were trash, and the Blueprint just stood out amongst the rest of the trash. Because if you look at albums that dropped that year off Blueprint, you know, you'd be like, okay, I see why people hold it in such high regard. And a lot of people who are fans of hip-hop now, like one guy in the thing we were having on I think it was Facebook, he says, yo, I know Reasonable Doubt may be better, but the Blueprint means more to me because it was his introduction to Jay-Z the rapper. So that's kind of why a lot of people are...
Oh, he just got...
Know,
he was just started late in the game. His mama and dad...
No, he's young. I mean, he was younger, though. Yeah, I mean, he's younger. Younger cat. So what I'm saying is, that's the thing. But even if you look at what came out around the Blueprint, music at that point, I mean, yo, Nelly was like the top dude in the hip-hop at that point. Like,
and that, yeah, and that, has a big thing to do with it, too. That's a good
Jimmy,
point.
Jimmy, I got to be honest with
for
you.
For me?
I feel that with your pick of Blueprint, you're dumbing down your listens to double your...
you have to listen to why I said that, though. You know what I'm saying?
Melodically, well-put-together album. Listen, let's keep it funky. My relationship
the production,
with Jay-Z,
the production itself, like, because that was the first
my relationship
with
Jay-Z, and I know we don't want to labor this and take it too... I respect him, and as an artist, I think he's one of the most talented rappers that we've ever seen. But at the same time, the name of the game with War Room Sports is objectivity and not being a hammer eater or a sycophant. Jay-Z has put out more garbage than any great that I can think of. I'm not saying he leads the category, but that I can think of, and
probably
my problem with it is with the talent that he has, it's inexcusable for him to put out bars like that. Now, we're hip-hop purists. I like to think of us as hip-hop purists. And the masses that now follow him, they can't relate to that statement because they're not really listening intently to the bars. They're a part of this newer generation where you buy into a brand. An artist is a brand. When you ask cats nowadays, starting maybe around 2004, what's the hot bar on the song? They can't tell you. They just tell you, yo, my man, he has Armandale vodka, and he's worth $300 million, and the last album that he sold went 3 times platinum. So you're counting album sales and accomplishments on an economic level as how you gauge the greatness of an MC as opposed to his pen game. There was a time in hip-hop where people took pride in their pen game because it's counterculture, which means hip-hop wasn't mainstream culture. It was a way for dudes that weren't necessarily getting it off in academia to show you, yeah, we on the streets, but we also sharp with our minds, and it translates into what we say, man. And Jay-Z ushered that out. He was a part of the problem. I dumbed down my lyrics to double my dollars. Y'all criticize me.
All I want to say is this. It's funny to hear you say that because when we debate hip-hop, you are the Jay-Z protectionist. But, Dev, just to give you a little context about what I was talking about, how the Blueprint came at the right time, for one, the soul samples, it's the first time they were used so heavy in Just Blaze and Kanye Killed the album production-wise. Now, around that same time, I'm going to read you some of the albums that came out surrounding the Blueprint, right? Bulletproof Wallace by Ghost, which was dope. Stillmatic by Nas was dope. Then you got Music by Eric Sherman. The Great Depression by DMX. That's when he was whack at that point.
That's when he was depressed.
You got Devil's Night by D12, Disappointment. The Infamy by Mobb Deep, which was ass. You got, this is the top hip-hop albums. Mr. Don't Play, Everything Works by Project Pat. You got, Novocaine by The Outlaws actually rapping. You got Face Off by Pastor Troy. Put Your Hood Up by Lil Jon and the East Side Boys. The Streets Made Me by Soulja Slim. Banger Ball by Mac 10. Album called Black Trash by Sticky Fingers.
I didn't know he was still rapping.
Did you think it was an album?
Yo, that's what I'm saying.
I mean,
like, these are the albums that came out around the blueprint.
That's what I'm saying. I definitely get that.
But then if you look
for the people who were just getting deep into hip hop at that time, okay, that's their excuse. Like for me, I knew Jay-Z before Reasonable Doubt came out, so there was no excuse for me for H to the Izzo, Girls, 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 Hola Jovito, Jigga That.
Hola Jovito.
No excuse for that.
I get you, but you're also one of them dudes that like, and this is the thing, like people love music in different ways. Like that would be like, yo, I ain't messing with this. I'm just gonna listen to everything from '88. But like,
I got something to go back to. They ain't got nothing to go back to.
But some cats just be like, yo, I need to hear new stuff, and it's like you have a bunch of trash, and you got something that stinks a little bit, but everything else stinks more. So.
No, but I'm on here like I can go like I'm gonna repeat for the people who might just be coming on the radio. I definitely think Blueprint as a whole project was way overrated. However, the six songs that I like on there is some of Jay-Z's best work. So I do see how people put that, you know, so high up in the pantheon of Jay-Z works. See, but you guys talked about, you know, him dumbing it down, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you still have, besides the fans who just want to be fans of brands and because he's doing this and doing that, you still have some of his fans who want to sit here and tell you that, oh, you hate him because the stuff he says goes over your head. Like, come on, I'm an intellectual. Like, Jay-Z has never said anything deep enough to go over my head. It's just that the things that he is saying are like the things that people think are so deep are so really are so simple, you know, really on the surface level. Like, you're overrating it because, you know, you've turned into a Stanley. Like, the stuff is not that deep. I'm not saying he's never said anything deep, because that would be a lie, but, you know, on a consistent basis, you can't run around talking about he's so deep and at the same time he's telling me I dumbed it down. So, you know, who are
because
you
here's the problem.
Compared to his
the
word.
problem is you're a Jay-Z fan, so it's like you want to be critical of him because you want him to bring you what he has brought you. Right. People don't understand that a lot of times when you're critical of things, those are things that you love. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a thin line.
It's not a thing where you have to love it or hate it. You can love it and still be critical of it.
Right.
There it is.
You know what I mean?
That's the bottom line.
I think
the whole
purpose
of the War Room Sports, man, we're teaching you.
Greg,
take
him
to the Gucci store and show him the loafs. We just showing y'all growth.
I was going to say Volume 3 slides under the radar. It's not in really anybody's top three. Nobody calls it one of the worst albums. It's kind of forgotten about. But I think Volume 3 is a highly underrated album. I like the production on Volume 3.
Did you on In My Lifetime, Volume 3?
No. That was Life and Times of Sean Carter. That had NYMP,
so you're talking about
No Ghetto, Dope Man.
No, I hate that. Are you talking about the one with Mariah Carey?
Which one is which
gray,
song?
The one with the gray color with him smoking a cigar.
I hate that album. That's the one with the Snoopy song on it?
Yeah.
Yo, I hate that album. Yo, the album
Wait a minute,
is trash.
Song? The Hard Knock we talking about?
No,
Hard Knock.
Life and
After him, Volume 3.
And why?
In My Lifetime, Volume 3 with Dope Man on it.
Yeah, Dope Man.
Yeah, that album is terrible. Dope Man is the best song on that album.
Yo, that album is a weed plate, and I don't even smoke.
Yeah, that album, man, I ate peanuts off of it because I don't smoke. And
yo, that joint had a song called
Dynasty,
the Snoopy song on it.
The Dynasty
Snoopy track.
Kick Rock. That was the whole, like, that's when he just went through a period. Like, In My Lifetime, Volume 3, and I was living with a dude at the time who said that was the greatest hip-hop album he'd heard to that point.
Early and that boy's homeless now.
Damn, Slender.
Damn, Beyonce. But, he made me lose my thought with that one. I'm like, I'm good.
I know you
put
them all out there. But, Dev, this is bring it back around. This all started because of the hype of Magna Carta. And I just want to say, me and Kill were talking through text, and Kill thinks that Magna Carta might be the single worst Jay-Z album ever. I am not that harsh on it. Although I do think this. I think there are good tracks on it. Like I like you know, it's sort of like one of the Blueprint things. It might be six good songs, but he has the single worst Jay-Z song I've ever heard in my life. Yo, Tom Ford is not even up for debate.
That's the worst Jay-Z song I've ever heard in my life.
Yo, and I've seen people on social media saying that that's one of the hottest tracks on the album.
And the thing is, I'm a Jay-Z fan, but that is the worst piece of trash. That song right there, yo.
That's worse than Diamonds, man.
Who told him that was
off
hot?
The Blue Streak.
Who said the
soundtrack?
Studio was like, yo, that's hot?
The Blue Streak soundtrack, Diamonds. It's worse than that.
Yo, this joint is worse than the song off the Sprung soundtrack, yo.
It's worse than I Know What Girls Like. It's worse than that.
Yo, it's worse than that, yo. Tom Ford is
I heard the album one time, but admittedly, I was at a cookout, so it didn't get my full attention. I heard a few things that I rocked to. Everything else, it didn't even capture my attention enough for me to just sit there and listen.
I've heard five tracks.
I can't make a sound judgment on the album just off that listen. So, you know, I can't crap on it. I can't praise it.
I wouldn't feel
comfortable because there's a lot of people out there talking about the first day it came out, it's a classic. And even Jay-Z in his interview with The Breakfast Club said, like, I don't hold those type of opinions. He said, I hold those opinions in no regard whatsoever. Even if somebody's dissing it the first day saying it's trash, or if somebody's saying it's a classic on the first day, he's like, there's no way you can listen to music, you know, in 24 hours and make a judgment on where this album stands.
And he's absolutely right.
Of history.
And
he said that for all you jock riders who talk about it was a classic on the first day. That's coming from your hero.
He's absolutely right. Listen, I listened to the entire album about five times, and I'm such a Jay-Z fan. I feel like sometimes I'll be trying to force myself to like stuff. Yo, I can't even force myself to like that.
You've been telling us the whole time you're a Jay-Z fan. You said that about seven times.
Yo, that is sanitation.
No, because I see what Jimmy's saying, because Jimmy, when Born Sinner first came out, Jimmy was loving it.
Oh, yeah, when J. Cole album first came out, I said, yo, this is amazing. But the more I listen to it, the more I realize that it's amazing based upon everything else being trash. But, yo, it's not even that good. And, yo, that album is kind of weak to me. So, shout out to everybody listening to our hip-hop conversation. I know I'm going to get some slander.
Yeah, I was about to say, before we lose all our sports fans, we'll move on from Roc Nation sports agent Jay-Z, Sean Carter, and we'll talk a little bit of NBA basketball. But before we do that, everybody, make sure you check out our website at warroomsports.com. If you want to call in and speak to us about any of today's topics, including your top five Jay-Z albums, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Jimmy, who's this NBA rap brought to these people by?
Man, the NBA rap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. The War Room on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone. And you can listen from BlackBerry or Palm phone. I doubt you will be because no one owns a BlackBerry or Palm phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed. No memory or storage wasted. Go to Stitcher.com/The War Room. And when asked for a coupon code, use The War Room because it will enter you to a contest to win some money. It's time to talk some hoops, gentlemen. Moving from hip hop to hoops.
Yo, you go hip hop, hoops, and hoes. You got the Holy Trinity. No.
Whoa there. Let's talk about one Dwight Howard, who chooses Houston. So we haven't been on the air since Dwight decided to take his talents to Houston, Texas. And there's been, like, a lot of reaction. We could talk about all of it, the Kobe reaction, the fan reaction, celebrities going crazy. And Kill, by the way, made a great video talking about the financial aspect of this deal. You can see that on warroomsportstv.com, Doc Bray breaking down the numbers. But, gentlemen, what are your overall thoughts on Dwight Howard and his decision to take his talents to Houston?
Wherever there's pressure, you will not find Dwight there. Dwight was so happy to get out of the shadow of the Laker great big men and away from Kobe's seething concentration and serious approach to basketball. That's kind of what it boiled down to, being objective and not really slandering him and calling Dwight what I really think he is. I don't think that he's necessarily going to a much better situation in Houston. He has gone to one that's younger, so maybe that's the upside. They're younger, but I don't know. I don't see that as – I don't see him any closer to winning a chip in Houston than he was as a Laker, you know. And so I think it really was about him getting away from Kobe, him getting away from Mr. Buss, who wasn't, you know, willing to hire Phil, getting away from D'Antoni, and ultimately getting out of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's shadow, Will Chamberlain, Shaq. Dwight doesn't deal well with the pressure of greatness and winning. He doesn't. It's a fact.
At the same time, it's a situation, though, where the Lakers just expect everybody to want to play there, you know, just because of all of that stuff that you just named. You know, everybody isn't built to go behind all of those greats. At the same time, it's nowhere near like Laker lore, but Houston Rockets have a roster of big men that they could trot out, you know, if you want to go name for name with people, but they just don't have the overall team success that the Lakers franchise has. I think it's interesting because I'm not really knocking him for leaving. Dwight Howard has done enough to his personal brand with all the flip-flopping over the past few years. I never really thought he wanted to play for the Lakers anyway. It came up as one of his destinations when he was in Orlando, and he had about six of them when he was still in Orlando. But when that trade was coming about and when the rumors started popping up, he did kind of start expressing, like, if I go there, I'm not going to sign a long-term deal. So all of this, you know, sitting around waiting for Dwight to make up his mind, I think Dwight's mind was made up from the day he stepped in Lakerland. So, you know, it's just one of those things. Jimmy keeps telling me, you know, and it's true. You know, it's not the same franchise right now because Dr. Buss is dead. His son is seen as the kind of the village idiot. So the same Laker lore that we're used to seeing, it might not be there right now. I'm not one of those people that's just about to jump off the – I mean, I don't care either way, but I'm not ready to just jump off the mountain and, you know, stick to that point 100% because I still think, you know, it's the Los Angeles Lakers. I think they'll reload, you know, and I don't think losing Dwight is the end of the world. So
no, I don't either. And just, you know, and I have been on record as saying that the Laker days of old are gone due to Dr. Buss not being there and the way the team is being run, because personally I've been disappointed with how the team is being run. But I also I listen to a lot of you know, LA radio and read a lot of the papers out there. I heard that Jim Buss is kind of embarrassed about how everything went down. So
he might straighten up.
supposedly
well, we don't believe you. You need more people.
And that may be true. But supposedly he's going to take a step back and let Phil, who's already getting paid as a consultant, but let Phil work with Mitch and have more of a say-so in how the basketball operations are run, and he'll just be the owner. That's the word from out there. Now, how true it'll be is kind of hard because I guess if you own the team, you always want a medal. Shout out to Jerry Jones. But supposedly he doesn't like the way things are going with the whole situation with the coach, and now Dwight decided to leave because – I guess he recognizes the same thing that a lot of people do. It doesn't seem to be working the way it used to. Now, onto the basketball side of things, with Dwight leaving, it's funny when I tell people this, but I've never really considered Dwight a Laker anyway. Something is weird. I think, Dev, you're right. I don't think he ever, like, because remember, he never wanted to be there anyway.
Yeah,
and
he didn't.
One good thing that came out of this that I saw him say, which is true, and I'm, you know, maybe he's just saying it, but he kind of woke up. He said that in Orlando, he wanted to make decisions before, but out of loyalty. Remember, he signed the – he could have been out of Orlando. Remember that? But he decided to sign that
right.
extra –
Right, he opted back in. Dummy.
He said that a lot – back then, he was making decisions because he didn't want people to be mad at him. But what he realized is regardless of whatever decision he made, somebody's going to be mad, so I might as well do what I want to do. And that
right.
kind of like what made his final decision to go to
That's
Houston.
Manly.
And,
That's
right.
manly.
I mean, it was manly
he,
something to say.
Had he stayed in L.A., since all of us have already deciphered that we never really thought he wanted to be there, had he stayed there, he would have been doing that so all the Lakers fans wouldn't be mad at him, which they are now. Jimmy pointed out to me the other day, the morning, the Friday morning before he made his decision, he gained 30,000 extra Twitter followers. And after he chose Houston, he lost over 100,000 followers. And, you know, they interviewed Laker fans. They're cursing him out. Kobe unfollowed him, which he said, Kobe said it wasn't like, it wasn't something where he doesn't like him. He said he's wishing him luck, but he was like, I don't follow cats who's trying to, you know, kick my team's ass. So we got to make sure he's truthful with that. Check his page, make sure he's not following him.
I know, right?
But, but he said it's not personal. He said, you know, he wished him luck. He just said, you know, I'm cool.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. To be honest, Laker fans as a whole are entitled, are the title bunch, and but it's the truth. So it's like, it's sort of like we expect more. Like we expect to win. It's not a thing
everybody
like,
was killing
wins.
Him.
Like, yo, we expect to win. Yo,
all
we
the fans killing him. They're killing him like 14 minutes after they were begging him to stay. Now it's like, we don't need him. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, that's like
which is probably true.
Like
the Lakers have. Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things where the Lakers have. They're basically. Everything they're doing right now is one-year contracts because at the end of this season, they're going to have one player unless they change that with an upcoming contract because they have
LeBron,
10 players under contract now. Yeah, they have 10 players under contract now. And if you count their newest moves in Cayman, and they signed somebody today. I forgot who it was. But it might go back down to 9. It might go back down to 9 because they're supposed to be using the amnesty clause on Metal World Peace. So let's say they go into this week with 9 players on the roster. Only one player on that roster is set to be there after next season, and that's Steve Nash. Steve Nash is the only person with 2 years left on his deal. So in essence, the Lakers, and he's making like $9 million, and the cap next year will probably be around 59 because it's like 58 this year. So we're saying the Los Angeles Lakers – The team out there with, what, Jimmy, 16 championships all time?
Mm-hmm.
Are going to go into a – they're going to go into the most talented free agent class since the LeBron decision, and he's going to be a part of that class, LeBron, Melo, Wade with his knees, you know, even Kobe, old Pierce. But the Lakers are going to go into this free agent period essentially with a $50 million blank check. So nobody can sit here and tell me that the Los Angeles Lakers are done. The Los Angeles Lakers are not done. Like, come on.
Yo,
now,
let me
speak to that point. I think with Jim Buss running the team, like, to be honest, Jimmy, it feels kind of a lot like Jerry Jones, whereas somebody's pride as an owner is going to take the team down into turmoil.
Right.
So the simple fact that the Lakers kept D'Antoni or Antoni, sorry about that, Mike Antoni, and not hired Phil Jackson, he did worse this season because he gave up more points on the court. And also Dwight Howard realizes, well, Antoni is not going to coach into the favor of my game, which is basically defense and getting the ball inside. So I think that's a problem. So even in the summer of 2014, if they have all this cap space and money,
mm-hmm.
and they say they get a lottery pick, if Antoni is still the coach, I know Melo doesn't want to play for him as he didn't want to play for him in New York. And I don't think LeBron will leave a defensive-minded team like the Heat and then go to L.A. So I think they may be in a position of the Cowboys where they may flounder upon mediocrity for the next several years.
Well, see, that's why I said it depends upon how Jim Buss reacts to this, because I've been critical of Jim Buss. But like I said, everything I've read, he's kind of embarrassed himself. So, and I know they do have Phil on staff as a consultant. They've been paying him. That's what I read. So
exactly.
I don't know how true it is.
That's what I'm thinking, Jimmy, because first of all, it's Jim Buss, but Jim Buss isn't in it alone. You know what I'm saying? There's still other people there that can kind of force their will a little bit and wrestle some of the power away from him. You got Jeannie Buss, and you got her husband, her about-to-be husband, who has 5 rings there. So they're going to listen to what Phil says once they, you know, really, really let him into the organization, even if it hurts Jim Buss's pride. Because at the same time, you know, he came in wanting to be the egotistical dude. He still doesn't want to be the dude who ruins a great franchise like the Lakers. So I think he's going to, you know, give way to his family a little bit and kind
of it depends upon how much of a tyrant he is, Dev. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not. After reading what I read, I'm not ready to say, okay, well, he's gonna Jerry Jones it.
let's see, because this I think that this free agent market this off season will tell a lot about how he's going to be as an owner. Because,
right.
you know, nothing would like matter more if he let them run it and win a championship. He's going to get his praise anyway. So,
and even if you don't land the biggest fish, you don't land LeBron James, you know, I think either way, you know, they have a real shot at a Carmelo Anthony. But with that much money, it doesn't just have to be one player. It doesn't have to be multiple superstars, you know, teaming up. You could put a really, really good team together for $50 million+. Now, I wouldn't be saying this if it was the Toronto Raptors with a $50 million check because, you know, nobody wants to go play there. So they're going to end up filling up their roster with a bunch of, you know, less than mid-level dudes, just dudes who want more money than they would make anywhere else, even though they're going to get the hell taxed out of them up in Toronto. So I wouldn't say the same if it was a team like that. But the Los Angeles Lakers with $50 million to spend and a talented free agent class like that, like, I think if anybody's sitting here at this very moment saying that they're done, it's basically because they don't like the Lakers. I don't care for the Lakers, but at the same time,
yeah.
you know, I'm real. Like, come on.
LeBron and Melo both will be in L.A., baby.
They want to play together.
Yeah, man. While we're speaking of that, I got a question for you gentlemen. Speaking about, like, the Lakers and their current situation.
Yo, I do.
Yo, what happened to P?
Peace about to get peace.
What do you guys think about that move? What happened to Peace?
Nothing.
Kobe's a little upset about that too.
Yeah, he wasn't really bringing anything to the table for them to like
win
significantly.
With that.
So
Ron got
it's
you.
Like no
he
more side balanced threes.
Oh,
he's one of them.
But he wasn't.
You know, game seven, he was a trooper. But you know, those days are over. And you got to do what you got to do. Kobe, and this is to all the people who think Kobe runs the front office. If he ran the front office so much, then why do we got to see Kobe bitching on Twitter all the time because the team's doing something he doesn't like? They floated out Pau Gasol, you know, trade rumors. He didn't want him traded. And I don't think that they refrained from trading Pau because Kobe was complaining. I think you know, they just didn't get the right deal for him. Now Peace is gone.
I think Kobe gets the least amount of respect from his front office.
Exactly. It's like I don't get where people talk about, oh, Kobe's the GM of that team. When's the last time something Kobe wanted, you know, to happen? Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't say Kobe's the GM, but then say Kobe bitched too much. Like,
yo, here's my thing, man. For those out there who think that Kobe runs the Lakers front office, answer me one question, yo.
Yo, what happened to Pete?
What about the celebrity reaction? Ice Cube, who's a huge Lakers fan, he straight up said
Cube,
F. D. Howard.
Yo, he said the Lakers don't need no biatches on the team, and he ain't say biatches. You know, he didn't keep it clean. Ice Cube, he didn't keep it Are We There Yet. He went back to America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, he wasn't O'Shea. He was a full Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted removed. Like,
mm-hmm.
He was going in on Dope Boy with it.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar said a little something more like, you know, along the lines of what Brad was saying about the pressure and, you know, Dwight, I guess, you know, he backed away from that. Shaq, you knew Shaq was going to show up.
Oh, yeah, everybody knew that. Everybody, we was waiting for that one.
Yeah, like, where's Shaq? Like, what happened to Shaq?
Yo, I'm the biggest Lakers fan, man. I think Kareem is the GOAT, yo, but I do think some of that stuff that he got was, like, just totally uncalled for, man. It is what it is. Like, yo, he didn't want to be there. Would you want him to stay there if he didn't want to be there anyway? Like, he didn't want to be there. Let him go.
You don't want to pay him all of this money per year, and then he's out there half-assing because he don't want to be on the team.
This reminded me, like, back in the day, you'd be on South Street, and you see a young lady who's very gifted. And you know what I'm saying? So you try to give her a little
talent.
Rhythm, and she'd be like, I'm cool, and you, I'm going to F you anyway. Like, you know what I mean? That's kind of how it is, man. Y'all know
and,
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm just one of those other things. Y'all didn't stop me in my tracks with my thoughts because you got me.
Oh, my fault, B. You must be thinking about somebody in particular. Like, yeah, man, F her.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, but, yeah, that's why I'm saying I don't really knock the dude like that because, you know, athletes have fought all of this time to be able to have these rights. You know, when it's your time, you're a free agent, you can do what you want. So,
you know, let's not call him a free agent and then knock him because he doesn't go back where you think he should go. Like I said, I think the Lakers in the long run will end up better off. I mean, of course, if you have a healthy Dwight Howard, would he wanted the torch passed a little quicker. And I think Kobe might have messed up the negotiations by saying out loud this week that he plans to play two or three more years. See, and Dwight took that, you know. he wants
the
torch passed
too,
where
man.
It's Dwight's team. He probably want to play with the dude. Because
Kobe is like, he's like a young Phil. He's like the young Zen master. Kobe doesn't say anything without, like, thinking it through.
Without thought, yeah. Because
why out of the blue, in the middle of negotiating with signing Howard, would you make that announcement?
He basically said, I don't want to play with him either. So for $3 million, $3.2 million for 1 year, the Lakers pick up Chris Kaman. And, you know, people have been slandering Chris Kaman. But I think for $3 million, I think it's a good pickup for $3 million.
I definitely do.
People don't realize, they're not picking him up to fill the shoes of what Dwight Howard would have been. They got a bargain center who, you know, if he plays to his potential, you can get way more out of him than with the $3.2 million that you're paying him. And if you don't get that Chris Kaman, if you get the Chris Kaman that was in Dallas last year, you know, 10.6 boards, then fine. It's not a risky investment. It's a one-year thing. You're going to clear him off the books just like you're going to do everybody else before free agency next year. I think it's a pretty good pickup, personally.
If it depends upon how my guy plays, you know, the Spaniard. Spaniard! Like, if he's able to, you know, go back to the old pal. I don't know whether he exists anymore, but if the old pal is somewhere in there, I think the Lakers, I mean, at the end of the day, where were they with Dwight? The seventh seed? Like, you know, so
barely.
I think it definitely was a good pickup for 1 year. Yeah, they were barely a seventh seed. You know what I'm saying? I also find it interesting, like, Dwight.
I don't think Dwight should have played this season.
Yo,
he's a Mavericks
he left
fan,
the
so
seventh
he
seed. Left the seventh seed, turned down the sixth seed to sign with the eighth seed. That's what he pretty much just did.
And everybody's thinking, oh, that's the greatest thing you could have done.
Like, yeah.
This ain't going to be no better.
That's what's interesting about that is what he did. Because is this something else that's interesting? My last point on this is that Dwight, you know, when Houston went after Dwight Hard last year, he said, yo, I don't want to go there. I don't want nothing to do with him. Yo, James Harden gets there. Ball's out of control, and it's like, yo, that's a nice destination. Like, so shout to James Harden for turning it around.
Yeah, but James Harden averaged like 26 a game, so you ain't want to play with Kobe.
James Harden definitely shooting the ball.
How far do y'all think Houston can go?
Man, there's so many variables that go into that, man.
Yeah. I really, at the moment, I don't really see, like, if they would have made that Josh Smith move, I would have given them a little bit more credit. But I don't think they've, you know, I don't know, man. I think it all depends on Dwight.
I think their
it depends on Dwight and how good he plays.
I think their offensive system and sets is going to favor Dwight more than the Lakers. And if he's healthy, because you got to understand, and we all do, Dwight Howard scores the ball by setting up pick and rolls. Like, he's going to be the pick man. He's going to dive to the basket. And then he's going to out-monkey everybody at the rim. Like, that's how he scores. So that game is suited for Jeremy Lin.
He can get his little jump hook, his little stiff jump hook working.
Yeah, but Dev, you got to remember, he's come out and said, I'm scared of what people think when I miss. So he worked on that jump hook. He worked on the J in practice. He worked on the J in practice, but he's scared to miss. So he goes back to what he knows. Jeremy Lin is a pick and roll guy. James Harden is a gunner, but when he wants to, he's a pick and roll guy. So it sort of suits him. Kobe in pick and roll for what? You soft, dude. I'm not giving set this pick so I can go score, which is what he's supposed to. You soft. Nash is a shell of himself, but you know that may have worked at one point in time. So he's in a better situation. As you said, I don't know that makes Houston a better team, but as long as there's less pressure for Dwight and Dwight can get his numbers, I don't think he really is that concerned with winning or getting chips.
Well, I tell you one thing though, as bad as the Lakers defense was last year, I don't see it. I see it getting worse without Dwight.
Might be
but here's something else I was thinking about, B. Austin.
to your point about the whole thing of him wanting to go somewhere where it's less pressure, because I was on that same like, you know, bandwagon in terms of, oh, he can't stand pressure. But I thought about it, like, it might be more pressure now turning the Lakers down to go to Houston, because if he would have went to L.A.,
now they're going to expect him
right
to win
away.
There.
Yeah, now it's like he kind of turned the pressure up on himself in a crazy way, because
well,
now all eyes are on him. Like, you turned down the Lakers to go to Houston, like, and this is the AC. Let's see what you're going to do
that.
Now.
And Dev is saying, yeah, and I can even buy into that, but Houston came in the room when they met with Dwight with no pressure t-shirts on.
No, I get that. It's like this. It's like two sides, B. Austin. It's like the pressure, that's going to come from everybody else. He might not have pressure in the city of Houston, or at least in the franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like
and even beyond that,
both ways.
You also got to understand. Yeah, I'll follow that. Go ahead.
No. Houston is a pressureless place now that they've gone through the Royce White experiment. They're used to dealing with
it. Beyond that, though, man, I guarantee you ownership in Houston still is going to put pressure because it's like they were selling. They were trying to do whatever they can to get Dwight. You know how you meet a girl and you try to say whatever you can say to get the games, but at the end of the day, and it's the same situation.
Dwight's a girl on the passive aggressive.
all I'm saying is they said what they had to close the deal, but there's pressure. I think he kind of, like, you know, in a crazy way, put a lot of pressure on himself.
Jimmy, it's like
you meet the talented Joan down South Street, you kicking it to her, and you telling her, oh, she like, yeah, well, you know, I don't do that early, and you're like, oh, it's cool, girl, it's cool, but then once you get her,
then you try
to get your LT on, like, the next night. Like, so,
yo!
So
Dev didn't say that.
So that's what the
Rockets,
you guys get the
that's point.
What the Rockets probably doing to dude.
We got somebody, we got one of our favorite callers on the line who definitely wants to chime in about these Lakers before we move on.
San
and
he's Diego.
From California. Rob from San Diego. Rob, what's going on? What you got to say about L.A.?
No, first, man, can you play that track one more time about peace?
you said you feel some type of way about that too, huh? Yo,
man.
By the way, man.
No.
Shout out to my...
No more tension whores. We need ball players.
Yo, what happened to Pete? Pete.
Shout out to Eric B and Rakim, but yeah, man.
Man, I'm glad. Let him go. We I love him. Thank you for one championship.
Yeah, no doubt. We know you out there. So what are the people in California? How are they acting now, man? Because you out there. Tell us what's going on.
They confused.
I think we lost Rob.
Yeah.
But yeah.
he might have got sacked by somebody. But anyway, man.
Dwight don't love LA.
Dwight don't love LA. Yeah, them days are over.
Yo, don't Dwight got like 6 kids to 7 different women?
Here you go.
No,
here you
got
go.
One.
Hey, Kill.
Two of them,
no, that's not true.
Two of them
Kill. Share no, Kill, that's not true.
Yeah,
Kill, that's not
one.
True. You know, this man, he's definitely Travis Henry status right now. Yo, and the thing is, they was like, yo, Dwight got like 5. He got like 5 kids.
Let Kill explain that real quick, probably in like 20, 30 seconds, because people would wonder, like, well, if he has that many kids by that many women, then how's he going to leave $30 million on the table to go to Houston? So, Kill, you know, being a Texas native, can you explain that to the people real quick?
Okay, real quick. So, as many people know, Dwight Howard could have signed a 5-year deal worth $117 million by staying with the Los Angeles Lakers. And per the NBA collective bargaining agreement, he could only sign with another team for 4 years and $88 million. So, therefore, off the top, it looks as if he left $29 million on the table by signing with Houston. But because of the federal and state income tax implications, $117 million in L.A. equals $60 million, and $88 million in Houston equals $51 million. And that's because of being taxed 41 home games, 41 away games. So that kind of aggregates the numbers and you know, spreads them apart. So it's only $9 million that Dwight Howard left on the table.
Now, Kill, if you factor in the cost of living, he might have came up more because, yo, we've all been to L.A. and we've all been to Texas, and we know that in terms of price, the price of goods and services, man, yo.
Yo, what you, like, what you paying in L.A. at the Shaky Shaky, like, and you can't even touch? Out in Houston, man, they got, like, supermarkets for the young ladies that are trying to put themselves through college.
Dog,
so,
even the toots in L.A., never mind. Yo. Anyway, man.
$300,000 buys you a mansion in Texas, and $300,000 in L.A. is subsidized housing.
That's true. Yeah, instead of spending like $6 million on a house in L.A., he could spend like $2 million on a crib in Houston and be chilling.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what I'm saying. So at the end of the day, he might have came up more in terms of leaving money on the table and everything, but between the taxes and the cost of living, it changes everything. Speaking of Lakers, we have an ex-Laker that made a move, and that's one Andrew Bynum. Andrew Bynum goes to Cleveland on an incentive-laden 2-year, $24 million deal. How do you guys feel about this move for the Cleveland Cavaliers? Because on paper, if healthy, the Cleveland could have a nice little squad, but then again, that was said about the Sixers this past year. So, Doc Bay, be
my honest.
Neck, what's going on? What
my back! My neck and my back! Oh!
My knee! My other knee!
Yeah, I
Yo,
think
what
it's
you
a smart move. I think it's a smart move by Cleveland to make it an incentive-laden deal. So really, he's only going to see $6 million if the same fiasco happens that happened in Philadelphia. So, you know, I mean, hopefully he's healthy, but who knows? They say he has, like, bilateral condition, which means both knees might be messed up. So who knows? He might have, like,
Kill, he got bilateral, degenerative, like, words that you just don't want to hear when you're talking about your big man.
Dan, what's your
bilateral
opinion?
Degenerative colitis in the anterior cruciate ligament.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the sentiments. I think Cleveland covered themselves pretty well because, like Akil just said, they would be on the hook. I mean, we're saying only, that's a lot of money, but they would only be on the hook comparatively, you know, for $6 million because the Sixers wasted $16 million on the dude. And, you know, all throughout the year, we were figuring that some stupid team was going to throw him the max, and it didn't happen. So, you know, I think they protected
themselves
nicely.
Cleveland played it right. They came up, making it happen. and they got a nice little – Cleveland is quietly putting together a nice little talented team.
Yeah.
I like the two-guard Deion Waiters. We all like Kyrie. We're waiting to see him translate that high skill level and his Uncle Drewism into actual winning basketball. They got a nice four-man. They got Anderson Varejao coming back. Hopefully he's healthy.
They have some expiring joints too, though, because they're trying to make a run to get LeBron back in town next year. I don't see that happening as much as the rumors are saying that he said it's a possibility, but I don't see that happening.
That's because Andrew Bynum, man, he reminds me of the boy Keith off Good Times, the one that was married to Thelma. And, like, yo, the boy played for the Bears. So he played for the Bears and was getting money, but then his knees got messed up and he had to move in the hood with them. Yo, that's Andrew Bynum, yo, because I don't see, like, long-term, when you talk about degenerative and all those other words Kill mentioned that I can't pronounce, I don't know how long-term he's going to be, but like you guys said, even without him, the team they're putting together, I mean, with the help of the NBA and giving them great draft picks, is they're going to be a talented bunch.
Yo,
you know?
Jimmy, you're absolutely correct in terms of the knee injury because, yo, my man Brandon Roy has super degenerative stage 4. Like, they say my man could die if he keeps playing basketball because of his knee. So,
yeah.
Andrew Bynum is in a similar situation, and he's much larger. Pause.
This is nice.
Yo!
But if he dies, damn. Jimmy, you got Rob back on the digital.
Yeah, man. Let's get to Rob because Rob broke up. He's out there in California, man. So we don't know what the people out there. Are
yo,
saying
shout
about.
Out to the Lakers for signing my man Jordan Farmar and getting in sync back in the game.
Yo, Rob, let us know what's going on out there in California, man. Are people really pissed or what's up?
So, yo, shout out to Jordan Farmar, man. He's from PAF, from the powerhouse. well, man, we know what's up, you know. We know when people get the Hollywood syndrome, and that's when it's time to go. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Ron Artest was out there trying to make movies?
Man, that fool was changing his name. I mean, going out to parties, man. It's like, you got practice the next day, man. You ain't no Dennis Rodman. You can't do it like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on.
Okay.
It's just like what Ice Cube said. Ice Cube summed it up. You know what I'm saying? We want ball players. When Kobe came to the league, he was 17 years old. He couldn't. He wasn't old enough to go to the bar. He wasn't old enough to go to clubs. What did he do? He played basketball. And
true.
He did it, man. He disciplined. We need dudes like that. We need people hungry. We need some hungry players. We need players like Derek Fisher.
But, Rob, I hate to tell you this, but Kobe's like the last of a dying breed. I think Kobe and KG are like those last guys. These young guys now, they're not built like that, man. They're just not.
They
want to
play. They want to play with each other.
I've actually read that one of the reasons Dwight didn't want to leave is because of how demanding Kobe is. And, you know, Kobe is just cut from a different cloth. Kobe is like the bridge between the old school Magic, Michael, Larry type guys and the new LeBron, this whole generation. Kobe is like the bridge between the two.
I got
and
it, yo.
There's a different mentality, man. These guys all grow up playing together. They're all friends. They want to play together all the time. So their mentality is they don't want to be pushed the way Kobe is pushing. Kobe
yo,
is like, you know, old school player.
There's something to what Jimmy is sharing with you right now, Rob, and it's this generation, man. Shout out to Dev, because when we played flag football, he said, Dev, stop throwing the ball so hard. That's kind of what it reminds me.
Yeah, somebody said
throwing
that?
It so hard. Throw it softer.
Oh, man. Nobody said that, yo.
He's right because even in street ball, you got to be competitive. In some games that I lose or, you know, I don't want to be, okay, I might shake your hand before the game because I'm going to be fat. I'm going to foul the crap. If you big, I'm going to have to foul the crap out of you, you know what I'm saying? So I don't want you beating me up, you know what I'm saying? But I'm a small dude, but really, though, it's like I don't like you, man, across the – it's a competitiveness, and not a lot of people know that. That's just like 2 months ago, you know, your boy was playing ball, and I felt nasty on my head. It was on a college basketball. I felt nasty. No. Here's the best part. It was like 6 hours before my graduation. You know what I'm saying? So. Get my AA, but I mean your boy graduated. You know what I'm saying?
When
my boy was explaining how I got hurt, he was saying, "Yo, man, you gotta let these guys." He's like, "Hello."
Yeah, we got you.
He said, "Yo, you got excuse Rob because they was playing basketball like it was a playoff game." You know what I'm saying?
But what you gotta understand, like when you juxtapose that to how these guys are in the NBA, there's just a difference, man. Like, you know, so
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yeah. Things are different now, Rob, and that's the bottom line, man. So, I mean, let Dwight go, but you know, it's gonna be funny because when the free agency market happens, we're gonna have some of them soft guys on our team because LeBron and Melo both coming to LA.
Oh, man. Yo! Well,
all right,
I got Derek Fisher flopping. Well, I can get used to this again.
Yeah.
All right, Rob, thanks for the call, homie. We appreciate it, man. Check in with us again like
later on the next
week. Y'all
definitely going to re-sign Derek Fisher. He a Laker for life.
No, I want Monte Ellis. I want Monte Ellis 1 year.
For what?
Sixth man of the year.
We do need scoring, but I don't know if there's enough basketballs in L.A. for Monte and Kobe, yo.
Put him on. Put him on. Yo, Kobe, six man. Kobe can get more rest with a Monte on the team.
We ain't never lie. Monte coming. Let it fly, yo.
Yo.
Let it fly. All right, Rob. Thanks for the call, homie.
Tired.
All right, B.
Peace, man.
Yeah, man. But be awesome, yo. It's definitely a difference, yo. I got this working theory, but I'm doing more research, yo. I think that the NBA and sports in general are becoming more for people with means as opposed to the poor, as it has been in the past, and a lot of it due to AAU. So I wonder if AAU overall has done more harm to the game or more good for the game. But, you know, we can get into that a whole other show.
That's a great hypothesis to study.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on, man. You know what I'm saying?
Done harm,
we do. We
done
put the work
harm to the heart. It's bad for the
yeah.
heart.
But speaking of people who play AAU and crazy, and I just you know want to do a fly segue. Rashi Wallace, the hometown kid. We all
the ball don't
Sheet,
lie.
Man.
The ball don't lie.
Sheet. Sheet has become an assistant coach.
Ball don't lie.
Right? In Detroit. The one player I thought would never become a coach, you probably would have been Sheed. So what do you guys think about Sheed getting into coaching?
No,
I
totally see it. He's smart.
He has a high IQ.
Mistake
I get that. I get that.
Dumb.
I get that.
I was about to say
I
that,
get the
Jimmy.
IQ
like,
of course.
I think his IQ is high, but I just don't think Sheed has the patience to be a coach. He's, you know,
exactly.
He can't be over on the bench getting technicals. And, you know,
yo.
But that might be – it might be the balance because Mo Cheeks is such a mild-mannered dude, so, you know, you have somebody like Sheed on your bench. And then Chauncey's coming back, so it's like, how's Chauncey going to get coached by somebody he won a chip with?
Oh,
like,
God. B. Austin's favorite guy. He's one of those – he makes
going
B.
back
Austin
to Detroit.
Guy
I don't endorse
yes, he
that.
Is. He's going back to Detroit. They might as well go out there and get Rip and Tayshaun, too, and have a last tour, final reunion tour.
Final reunion tour where they win 30 games?
They're getting smacked everywhere they go. Reunion tours never work anyway. I don't care who you are. But I just want to slander Chauncey because he's one of B. Austin's guys. Like, B. Austin has, like, his guys. He's one of them. Uh-oh.
Magic is.
That's not me, though, B. Why you going to call my guy? That wasn't me. I don't know who did that. That wasn't me, though. So tell us why Chauncey's so great. Chauncey's
listen,
a Hall of Famer,
this guy is Nicholas Skidishvili. So, and Darko Milicic, he likes the Eastern Europeans.
Kills guy is Boris Diaw.
He just ain't
had
no heart.
Yo, Boris Diaw locked, never mind. He locked up.
He's going,
great.
That's Kills guy. Anyway,
yeah, he beat up LeBron for a game and a half.
Everybody has their – everybody that's listening, either live or on the podcast, everybody knows it's a player that you like. You may not think he's the greatest, but for some reason you admire his game. That's
right.
What we're talking about. Chauncey is one of those guys. And Dev likes all the European players. And Kill is
Darko.
Boris.
Darko, I still got hope for Darko. Darko, nice.
Wow.
Yo, he's still holding on hope.
Darko can do
Yo.
Way more than Chauncey.
My guy's Luis Scola. Hold up, you said Darko do more than Chauncey?
I said he could do way more than Chauncey.
I was about to say, that sounds like a GVT.
In terms of FIFA and soccer.
Yo, he just put your man Chauncey in a GVT matchup. Dang!
A GVT matchup. Look, my guy's Luis Scola. I mess with Scola. You know what I'm saying?
Nice
but anyway.
2K.
Yeah, 2K is a beast. He's the second best player next to David Lee.
But yeah, it
anyway.
Is difficult. Not difficult, but it's funny to see Rashi Wallace on the sidelines. I mean, I know he's not the head coach, and they actually, you know, they brought him in to work with their bigs. So, I mean, I do think in practice he'll probably be a great coach, but, you know, they're going to have to control his emotions on the bench because, you know, once the refs start doing something that he doesn't like, he's going to have to realize that he's not the head coach, and, you know, you don't really have a right to be over there screaming and getting text, so... But as far as working
yeah.
with big men in practice, I think their bigs will be better off for, you know, having worked with Sheed because I think he could probably teach it better than he does it. Not saying that he did it bad, but we all have this notion that Sheed, as talented as he was, he never really wanted to be the man.
I think they should let Shea coach, but shouldn't let him attend the games. Like, he shouldn't be at the games.
Craig Hodges was like that. Craig
That's
Hodges
not
was
even
calling
a joke.
Some
I'm laughing
because
it's funny,
Lakers.
But I agree.
And shout out to Jetty Mark. Jetty Mark's in the chat room. He said he may have got the coaching gene from Ellerby at Gratz. And we're all old enough to know that, well, like, most of us played in an era where we had to play against Coach Ellerby.
They were in our division.
Coach
we got smacked by the
They were in our division. They beat the shit out of them. Anyway, Coach Ellerby did his coaching in practice. You remember the games? He didn't even do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Didn't
man,
happen.
So anyway.
I mean, he did have an overabundance of talent, so, you know. I ain't trying to slander.
This is true.
Boys, they used to work like crazy, though. They had to run cross-country. They were the only team that you couldn't play for Gratz unless you ran cross-country. So I just carried
I probably could have never played for them because I wasn't running nobody's cross-country. Anyway,
I ain't running cross
another story
street.
Real quick. I want to hear Kill's opinion on this story because we actually did a video on this, which is Monte Ellis. Monte turned down 3 years, $36 million after he opted out of his $11 million per year contract, 6 years, $66 million. He was trying to get 4 years, $40 million, and now the
money. But that's what he's saying now.
There,
I think he was trying to get more than that. But.
Yeah, probably, yeah. But he looked like he was trying to get that extra year of guaranteed money, but the market isn't what he thought it would be, so now he's switching agents. It's a big mess in terms of Monte Ellis. Doc Bay, we did a video on this. It's actually on warroomsportstv.com. We talked about Monte Ellis and his decision. What do you think about what happened with Monte?
Man, that's
you should be ashamed of yourself the way you can.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Latrell Sprewell situation where he turned down a bunch of money to feed his family and he never even seen that type of money again in the NBA. So this is Monte Ellis valuing himself much higher than the market does. So 3 years, 36, that's $12 million a year. Now he may have to sign 1 year for $5 million, maybe for the mid-level exception, prove himself, and he may get like a two-year $12 or $13 million, two-year $14 million contract last year. So, yeah, it's pretty bad move on his part. And then he fires his agent. So basically he feels now that his agent told him to opt out, thinking that his agent had intel that he would get more than $12 million per year. So then he found out he's not going to get that, so he goes to the agent, F you, fired you, and now he's not going to even get close to that.
Do you think it's possible he could have took bad advice?
Would you? I mean, definitely bad advice. I mean, but hold up. Who is he? Who is Monte Ellis not to know that was bad advice? I mean, we all know that if we were Monte, we wouldn't have opted out.
Here's the thing, Kill. Like, Monte Ellis, because of his scoring prowess and the fact that he plays on bad teams, he believes that he's an elite-level player. And then you could argue that he has elite talent. But I've also looked at several players, Jamal Crawford, Jason Terry, and J.R. Smith. If you look at their careers over the last 5 years, and you look at what they are paid, their contracts over that time span, Monte Ellis was offered more than market value anyway. He should only be a $6 or $7 million a year guy. And he does absolutely nothing else other than score. He adds no value. Defensively, he might be worse than Rudy Gay.
Damn.
He offers no resistance. Because
I mean, I think Monte, he was banking on the
him, that's
he
him
banking
running
on
out.
The notion, B. Austin. He was banking on the notion that for the past few years, he's kind of been looked at as a star, maybe not a superstar. But I get what you're saying because he definitely seems to belong in that class of players that you named. But at the same time, you know, his agent is negotiating off the fact that he's not a six
he's
man,
getting new
even
money.
Though we all think, yeah. We all think he probably should be one for his skill set, but, you know, he averaged 19 this year, but there's been seasons when Monte put up like 25 a game. So, you know, they're still trying to live off of that.
He's a 6'3", two-guard who doesn't rebound and doesn't defend.
I think, you know what, here's my thing. I blame KC Mack for all this because KC Mack had it all figured out and it didn't go through, so it's KC Mack's fault.
He's supposed to be in Dallas right now.
Yeah, so KC Mack, it's all your fault, man. You had Monte thinking that the whole
They don't need him in Dallas. They got Vince Carter.
But he was going there with Dwight. He was going there with Dwight. So, yeah, before he came to Milwaukee, you know, in Golden State, he put up 24 a game, 25 a game.
26 a game, I thought.
No, 25 and a half was his high. So, yeah, 26 you round.
See, I give him props. He upped his assist up. He put his assist up and scored less, man. So, and plus, Monte Ellis is a beast on 2K. I used to cook Naran with it, and I'm only saying that because Naran's in our chat room. He know Monte used to give him the business on 2K. But,
He could only get 19 a game because he got another jackbox in the backcourt with him with Brandon Jennings, and they had J.J. Redick shot.
See, I don't think like Monte is the type of dude, like he's not your starting two guard on a championship team. You know what I mean? Unless that team is so stacked at every other position and all they need is some extra scoring, then that could be a different situation. But I don't see Monte being that type of guy. So they definitely overvalue his situation. Man, how can you turn down $12 million a year? I know you wanted that extra year, but damn, dude.
Yo, like I said on our video, can y'all imagine going home and telling your chick, like, hey, babe, I had $11 million on the table, but I told them I wanted more, so now I don't have nothing.
Like, I opt out of 11 for this year. They gave me 12 for the next three. I said, nah. And now, like, I'm about to be with Latrell Sprewell somewhere. But, nah, he'll get signed somewhere. But, you know, they definitely overvalued him, and they should have taken that deal and
3 years,
that he was worth it.
3 years,
it's not going to go that low. It's not going to go that
low. No, he ain't going to take a 3-year $15 million deal.
Yeah. 3 years, but 3 years, $24
million. He ain't going to take three. I think he's probably going to sign a 1-year deal like Kill said. And then try it again.
Well, you know, Iguodala did kind of the same thing, but the reason why I look at his situation differently is because he got an offer sheet from the Kings for, what is it, like $56 million? And he ended up signing with Golden State because the Kings snatched the offer off the table, and Denver wasn't even going to match it. So he would have been a King had he signed that offer. But he was waffling with the offer, so they snatched it off the table. He ended up signing with the Warriors for $48 million. Now, the only reason I don't look at it the same way is because I don't think Iguodala wanted to play for the Kings. So it wasn't all about the money for him. I'm pretty sure he could have gotten the same deal, but that's why he didn't sign the offer sheet, because he's like, man, if Denver don't match this, then I'm stuck here. He would have only signed it for leverage.
What's your favorite
leverage?
The Warriors is a team that he would want to play for right now. You know what I mean?
And then, you know what, and shout out to Jetty Marr also, because he pointed out that if Monte tried the, like, 1-year thing, it'd be a tough year for him next year in free agency with all the names that are going to be available.
Ooh!
He better go ahead and take that 3 years.
Now.
3 years, $29 million, maybe?
3 years, $21 million.
Damn! He lowballing the shit out of dude. You can't pay him less than J.R. Smith. What did JR
do? Honestly, though, Earl is a nut, but Earl does more, which doesn't mean I ain't. That
come
ain't hard
on,
to do,
man.
But still,
he
does
got
a little
game
more
like
than
that.
Monte, though.
I mean, statistically, you're saying?
No. Earl is
Monte
not a good
25.
I think you pooping on Monte a little bit, man. You ain't give him enough credit.
Occasionally,
we all know he's a jack.
Jimmy, you can give Monte 20, dog.
I don't think J.R. Smith has the ability to ever average 6 assists a game.
Nah, he could, but there would be 6 turnovers to go with it. But Earl plays
one to one.
On this ball, Earl. Anyway, man, we got to get out of here.
Earl rebounds and he plays a little bit of D. You can get in Earl's pride and he'll play D. He'll get his ass busted.
I don't know where you saw that at. Maybe you're talking about 2K. I ain't never seen Earl play D a day in my life. Anyway, listen, man, we got to get out of here. Thanks for joining us again in the war room, good people. Shout out to everybody who chimed in the chat room, Facebook, Twitter. The callers that got through, shout out to Rob. Those that we didn't get to, we apologize. Tune in next week. Same time, same place for another episode of your favorite show. We'll be doing what we do the way we do it. Until then, enjoy your sports week, and we'll see you back next week, same place, same bat channel. Watch all of our
you know, content online, Facebook, Twitter. You know how to find us, War Room Sports. And go to warroomsportstv.com to watch our videos. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We'll see you chumps on top. Rest in peace, Cousin Harold and Ricky Baker.
See you in Houston tomorrow, the right.
Jimmy, know the blueprint.
Yo,
every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dev, PJ,
Woo.
B. Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial.
Call it
323, working 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah,
physical podcast, let's talk push. Showtime like magic in the block push. Listen live. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.